Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers, the guy who's been out running around here and there taking care of Big Ten wrestling tournament. Jeff, we missed you.
Well, I appreciate that. Right back at you.
It's not this. A week without Jeff Byers is, I don't know how to finish that. It's like a week. anyway. Like
a week without ants at a picnic or something.
That's not the route I was going to take, Jeff. You were away last week. We missed you. Just even a preview, we're going to miss you next week. Last week, you were at the Big Ten wrestling tournament. Next week, you'll be at the national tournament. The great thing about you covering Penn State wrestling is it's always you got good stuff to talk about with that team.
Well, that is for sure.
Before we preview next week in the Nationals, let's go back last week. I know it's been several days since then, but how about just a wrap-up of what happened at the Big Tens?
Well, it was really, truly an amazing tournament by Penn State. And, you know, I've been talking to folks this week, and to understand the exceptionally high expectations that Penn State was under, you know, I kind of compare it to Ohio State football for the upcoming season. You know, Penn State was expected to run away with the team title at Big Tens. They had five number one seeds in the tournament going in, and all 10 wrestlers were seated in the top six. And despite those lofty expectations, Penn State far exceeded the expectations at the end of the day, which, again, when you have the type of anticipation that Penn State did, to surpass those expectations really is stunning. And when you do so with one of your three-time national champions not competing, I mean, not being able to go out and wrestle a full match in Carter Starace, it's even more of a testament to just how much this team stepped up in that Big Ten tournament. And, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, there's a bunch of statistics I could throw at you, but the biggest thing is Penn State lost one bout the entire weekend to a lower-seeded wrestler, and that was Bo Bartlett in the finals as the one seed losing to a number two seed, who I think a lot of people out there were looking at as the favorite anyway in Jesse Mendez of Ohio State. That was the only bout where Penn State lost to a lower-seeded wrestler. Penn State pulled off seven upsets by seed. And in the contested bouts, again, you take the two injury defaults from Carter Starace out of the equation. Penn State lost four bouts the entire weekend. Three of those were to number one seeds, and the other was the aforementioned match with Bo Bartlett, the one seed losing to a two seed. I mean, that's just incredible stuff. And every wrestler outside of Bo Bartlett wrestled two or above his seed in the Big Ten tournament. And obviously, if Penn State is able to parlay that success to the NCAA tournament here next week, this is a team that is going to be in prime contention for the scoring record of 170 points at the NCAA tournament. And I think we'll have a chance to really solidify itself as pretty clearly the greatest team in the history of college wrestling.
So, obviously, an impressive performance, Jeff, last week there. How about, what were the highlights for you? What were the matches that really stood out?
You start with Braden Davis. Obviously, this is a true freshman. He came in as the lowest-seeded wrestler in the Big Ten tournament, and he goes out and wins the Big Ten title. And does so, as has been noted in several places. Andy Elder is a longtime beat writer for Penn State, was the one that pointed it out to me. But he wins the Big Ten title as a true freshman by beating three sixth-year seniors and a fifth-year senior. So, you know, the wrestlers he beat to win the Big Ten title had a combined 23 years of college wrestling experience. And, you know, here's this guy going out and running the table. So I think no question who the biggest surprise of the weekend was. But I think Tyler Kasak, the other true freshman in the lineup, is right there as well. He finished third, his only loss to the number one seed in a hotly contested bout, and he picked up some bonus points for Penn State along the way. I mean, I think those two guys really showed that they are wrestling at their peak, and obviously you hope that translates into the NCAA tournament. But those guys certainly have a chance to be All-Americans and probably high-placing All-Americans. I mean, Davis will go in as the number one seed now at the NCAA tournament. But I think the other one for me, and I mean, I don't think a surprise necessarily, but Mitchell Messenbrink, the way he came back from a 9-2 deficit against the returning champion in the Big Ten, Dean Hamady, was very special stuff. And I think, again, Mitchell Messenbrink now goes in as the number two seed and is certainly a legitimate national title contender at a loaded weight class at 165.
That's the match. Just, you know, to make a comeback of that magnitude to me in a tournament competition, that stood out to me as pretty amazing. Now, I know we talked about Carter Storace 2 weeks ago going into the Big Tens. He was a question mark medically. Just real quick, if you could explain for those of us who are not, you know, wrestling experts, how this works, where he actually has to get on the mat and then medically forfeit to qualify. Correct. Then potentially the following in for the Nationals?
Yeah, so the conference tournaments are the qualifiers for the NCAA championships. That is how you get to the NCAA championships, is by competing in your conference championships. And so you have to go and compete. Now, I'll use compete in air quotes here, because compete means you step on the mat. You have to weigh in, obviously make weight, and then you have to be out on the mat, compete in a bout. And so Carter Storace obviously did that, went out, injury defaulted in both of his bouts after 1 second, and therefore is eligible for the NCAA tournament. Because he ends up being in that large selection, because he does not place in the conference tournament, the highest, and this is a little change, but it's a formula now that is used to determine the seedings. And because of the number of bouts that he had, which was 12 going into the Big Ten tournament and then not placing at the Big Tens, number 9 was actually kind of the highest seed, not kind of, it was the highest seed that he could get in the NCAA tournament. Now, that might be something. I think a lot of people are calling for that to be tweaked and to look at that as something that, listen, if you have a guy, it generally makes sense. I mean, I think the formula and what they're trying to do generally makes sense. When you have a 3-time national champion who was undefeated on the season and beat, I think it's 3 of the guys that are seated in the top 8, and that's not counting the win over Makai Lewis, the number 1 seed, in the exhibition NWCA All-Star meet, it does seem a little foolish. And so, you know, we'll see. I think they will probably try to tweak it, and hey, we can make some adjustments here or there where it's clearly an injury situation. And if the guy has a resume like Carter Storace's, and again, it's not really Storace. I think a lot of people, to me, are looking at this wrong in terms of, oh, it's a disservice to Storace. I mean, you can certainly argue that. But I think more so by putting him at the 9 seed, like Makai Lewis is the number 1 seed. And now in a quarterfinal match, you're putting him up against a 3-time national champion. Like, to me, it's more unfair for some of those guys like at the top of the seedings here in that weight class. I mean, Makai Lewis probably should be in the finals. I think he's probably the second best wrestler in that weight class this year. And now you're, again, pitting him against a three-time national champion in the quarterfinals because Starace had to injury default a couple of bouts at the Big Ten. Carter Starace is, I don't think it much matters to him when and where he faces these guys, but it does matter to a guy like Makai Lewis. It's the difference between whether you get to the finals or not. And I'm not saying, by the way, let me just clarify there too. Makai obviously is capable of beating Carter Starace and could still end up in the finals, but it is a much tougher path now than you would expect the number one seed to have to get to the NCAA finals.
You know, Jeff, I'm glad you brought that up because those other wrestlers who are in his bracket, those are the ones who have to say, oh my goodness, look what you've done to me. But just to make it clear, this was a formula being used that had him ended up seeding ninth. It wasn't a judgment call that you could go to the committee and say, what in the world were you thinking? But
correct.
Let's talk quickly. The rest of the wrestlers, a lot of top seeds still for Penn State, correct?
Yeah, you end up with four number one seeds, two number two seeds. So you have six guys that by seeding are projected to be in the finals. That would tie an NCAA record in terms of most finalists. And, you know, the other four guys, again, are all seeded in the top 10. Top eight are All-Americans. So you have eight of the 10 starters projected as All-Americans by seed. And, you know, one of those that isn't is, again, a three-time national champion in Carter Starace. And the other, by the way, is Aaron Nagao, who's a 10 seed at 133 and took fifth last year when he was wrestling at Minnesota at the national tournament. So, you know, Penn State is very much in contention for 10 All-American honors here this season. And again, that's only been done once in the history of the sport, and that was the 2001 Minnesota team, and they did it without any wrestlers in the finals. They had all 10 of their wrestlers finish third through eighth in that tournament. Penn State has a chance to far surpass what any team has done.
Jeff, thank you so much for the review of the Big Ten tournament, the preview of the Nationals. Now that we're done with quarter number one, quarter number two, we shift gears. We're going to go from wrestling to basketball. Penn State making its appearance at the Big Ten tournament for hoops. We'll have a review of what they've done so far. Stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We spent quarter number one in Jeff's area of expertise, wrestling. Jeff, I want to shift gears. How about we talk a little bit of Penn State hoops? Another area that you're expert in, right?
Probably not as much, but I enjoy all the Penn State sports. So, but I am excited about Mike Rhodes and what the future for this program is with him. And, I think this first year, in a lot of ways, he deserves a ton of credit for a bunch of different things. But I think it is helping lay the groundwork and the foundation here for bigger and better things to come for the program.
I agree, Jeff. And first of all, I want to just put out full disclosure. We're recording on Thursday, okay? So we are aware of the Wednesday night game, and that's where it ends. So if they played a phenomenal game Thursday or they stunk out the joint, we are not aware of that. So we're having this conversation based on what happened on Wednesday night, which was a 66-57 win against Michigan. And I don't know, Jeff, if I'm going to use that game as the over-under as to whether Mike Rhodes' first season was a success or not. But I think the fact – I think if they would have lost that first-round game to a not very good Michigan team, that would have left a bad taste in the mouth, I'm sure, of the team and of the for the fans.
Yeah, I agreed. And I think you know, I think it's a big deal if this team gets to the NIT. And I know there's a lot of fans that that don't necessarily feel that way. But I just think when you're looking at a first-year head coach, and listen, there's going to be some big questions here in the offseason in terms of who comes back. Well, I guess through the transfer portal too, but in particular, like Ace Baldwin, does he come back and use his extra year of eligibility? Because if he does, I think an NIT run can really benefit. Regardless, I think it benefits the program. But I mean, I think depending on how many of these guys are back next year, like it can really be beneficial in terms of allowing this team to take that next step and be an NCAA tournament next year. And so, I think getting the win over Michigan, and as you said, we're recording this before the Indiana game, but I think if they get that, I think they will be an NIT team, and I do think that is a significant step for a first-year head coach at Penn State. Like, that is a big deal.
Well, I also think it's just a big deal that this is not just a first-year head coach at Penn State. He had to put this team together from scratch. There was literally nothing coming back. I know, you know, Kanye Clary, who was gone. I think there's one other player. Was it Lily, I think, who came back from last year? Regardless, they weren't bringing back any experience, really. And to put together a team that had a high side to them, Jeff. It wasn't, you know, we're going to see around the 500 record, but along with that, there were some highlights where they beat some very good teams. They beat some tournament teams. So we saw some promise of what is capable with this team. Yes, there were also some lowlights. You don't lose to Bucknell and be proud of that. But I think we saw some growth during the season and some promise of what could come later, right?
Yeah, no question. And yes, again, some losses that, some folks will term inexcusable, but I just think, again, it's a first year head coach, a bunch of players that were kind of thrown together and did not have a lot of time together to prepare for the upcoming season. And yeah, no question, some disappointments, big disappointments along the way, but also some, you know, really special moments, the comeback against Illinois, the win over Wisconsin. I mean, there were some really good, big-time quality wins for this program along the way as well. And, I think in terms of the future of the program, fans ought to feel pretty good. I think Mike Rhodes seems to have a really good grasp on what it's going to take to be successful long-term consistently here at Penn State. And it's not something that's going to happen right away. But truthfully, as you said, when he came in, I mean, there basically was no roster. I mean, he built this thing truly from scratch and put together a team that, again, did get some good wins along with, yeah, some very tough losses along the way. But I do think, as you saw the season go along here, I think overall you can see what it is Mike Rhodes is trying to do in terms of the type of play he wants. And I think you can see with the players he did bring in, there's a lot of talent on this roster. And I think, again, moving forward, I think this is going to be the low point this season in the Mike Rhodes era. Well, you look at the history of Penn State basketball, if your low point is a 500 season, sign me up. Like, I think every Penn State hoops fan that's been following for at least a decade is like, yep, I'm good with that. If that's the low point, we're all in. And we'll see. I mean, obviously that's not a known quantitative fact just yet, but I'm convinced that it will be the case. I think Mike Rhodes will have better and better teams here in the coming years.
Well, Jeff, if you're convinced, that's enough for me, okay?
That's all it takes. Let's be honest.
You speak with authority. I will listen, Jeff. Well, and just to name the couple names that we just essentially found out over the last couple weeks been talked about, it's Ace Baldwin and Puff Johnson who have the eligibility to come back for another year. I think if Ace Baldwin comes back, that absolutely raises the floor for this team going into next year, no doubt about it. And I think we saw enough of Puff Johnson, especially recently, that if he would return, that's also would be very helpful to this team going forward. Now, talking specifically about the game Wednesday night, Jeff, against Michigan. Now, this was what, a number 11 versus number 14 seed, something like that. And you wouldn't expect this to be the highest level of basketball, and it wasn't. It was not a pretty game, but and maybe this is damning with faint praise, but I think it says something for this team that I don't think Penn State played very well on Wednesday night. I really don't think they did, and they still managed to win. To me, that is a compliment, that you could still win games in the Big Ten. Michigan's not very good, but they are still a Big Ten opponent. And to win when you don't have your A game, I think speaks well for Mike Rhodes and the team.
Yeah, and I think the defensive effort is what, you know, Mike Rhodes would hang his hat on in that game with Michigan. And, you know, if you're giving that that effort, right, it's going to keep you in a lot of games. And Penn State is certainly capable of shooting much better. And if it does that, again, I think Penn State can – make some noise here, you know, a little noise anyway at the Big Ten tournament. But I think if they're able to get into the NIT, I think they could go on a nice little run there. And if that happens, again, to me, it can really lay the groundwork for future success. I mean, I think those extra practices, that extra time together, heading into the offseason can be a big deal, especially, again, when you have a first-year coach and young players.
Yes, that is the case with this team. You want to look at it like, okay, expectation level going into this season could not have been very high. If you're honest with yourself as a Penn State fan, there's not much you could have expected going in. But they still gave us some really exciting basketball, some nice wins. And just to mention, you talked about the defense. Defense usually isn't necessarily so exciting in a lot of different sports. But in basketball, it's not just that they play well defensively, Jeff. They're playing an exciting brand of basketball that makes that defense, it makes it tough to play against, but I think it also makes it more interesting and more fun for the fans.
Agreed, and I think it's a big part of the equation here for Mike Rhodes, again, building this program and moving forward. The other thing, Jim, to me is, you know, I think when you're trying to sit back and analyze the job Mike Rhodes is doing, you know, I think you look at both how the team progressed throughout the course of the season. But I think when you look at, I mean, you knew Ace Baldwin was a very good player, but I think he's, you know, probably taking another step in terms of his overall development as well. I mean, he's a terrific all-around player. But I look at guys like Qutus Wahab and Zach Hicks, and I mean, the progress that these guys have made throughout the season, you know, you go back and look at where they were in November and the contributions they were making then versus what they're doing and able to do now. And again, I think that's I think that's significant. You're seeing that development that you would expect and hope to see from guys at this level. But when you're actually seeing it, I think there's reason to be optimistic and excited about the future here for this program. And, you know, I think back, Jim, to when Micah Shrewsbury was announcing he was heading to Notre Dame. By the way, it's 1 year in. I get it. I'm not ready to tell you that it's a failure out there in South Bend. But would you rather be Penn State or Notre Dame right now in terms of the basketball season? And there's no question about the answer to that. And it ain't South Bend where you want to be supporting. So, and listen, I do think it's a big deal what Mike Rhodes was able to do this season. And again, to me, he's just done a tremendous job in laying the groundwork for a successful future.
Two quick points from me here, Jeff. One of them, you mentioned Wahab. That's going to be the hole that they really are going to need to fill next year. They struggled. He was the only big guy, and they still got outboarded. He was all by himself oftentimes under the boards. They need to figure that out for next year without Wahab. And you brought up Micah Shrewsbury at Notre Dame. This might be me being spiteful, but I'm okay with Notre Dame not doing well. So that's just me as a Penn State homer. All right, Jeff, that's it for quarter number two. Enough wrestling and basketball. How about we talk some football? We'll do that when we come back for quarter three. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back into the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. Jeff, I was interested in it. We talked wrestling in quarter one. We talked basketball in quarter two. I enjoyed both those conversations, but as promised, let's hit some football. And I want to hit on just a couple notes from this week that occurred with, I'll call them former Penn Staters. I wanted to get your take because I know you're a big Steelers guy, so you follow NFL football. The Eagles signing Saquon Barkley. Now, I'm an Eagles guy, and I know in the NFL you're not supposed to invest money in running backs, but this ain't any ordinary running back. This guy's pretty special. I'm thrilled that the Eagles invested in Saquon. What's your reaction as a Steeler fan?
I am not happy. but, you know, so the caveat is always going to be, like, I think Saquon Barkley is worth that investment, even at running back, if, and it's a capital I, capital F, if he stays healthy. And actually does what I think he's capable of doing. And obviously we're just not going to know that until we get, a couple of years into this and see how it plays out. But I also think it is more likely, I mean, listen, you're going to take a pounding at running back, so injuries can happen anytime. But, right, it should be less likely running behind that offensive line than, say, the one he had at Penn State or the one that he's had with the New York Giants. And even as a non-Eagles fan, I am excited for Saquon to see what he can do, really for the first time since he's been in the national spotlight, behind a legitimate, good offensive line. And this is a better than good, but I mean, he's never even had what you would call an okay offensive line in his collegiate or professional career. So count me among those that, as much as I'd rather see him doing it for the black and gold, I am excited to see the numbers that he can put up. And I also do think the investment makes a lot of sense from Philadelphia's standpoint because of what I think he can do to open up that offense and make it a little more manageable for Jalen Hurts. I think having that legitimate home run threat at running back and a guy who can do it either receiving the ball out of the backfield or taking carries, I think that really helps open up the diversity of what Jalen Hurts can do at the helm of that Eagles offense.
And as an Eagles fan, I look at it in terms of number of weapons. We already see good wide receivers, good tight end, Jalen Hurts himself as a weapon, and that offensive line is so good, they will make an average running back look pretty good. My question is, how good will they make Saquon Barkley look? It could be very special. And, you know, the injury factor, I look at it, Jeff, as you're right. And I think any running back in the NFL is vulnerable, for that matter, in college football. Also, we've been very fortunate the last couple of years with Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, and I don't think it's any coincidence that having two guys sharing the load helps their health. But Saquon Barkley, as you said, capital I, capital F, if he's healthy, it could be pretty special for the Eagles. One more quick off-the-field news, and I don't think it got a lot of play, but I thought it was interesting. Jordan Vandenberg, the defensive tackle for Penn State, he made the announcement that he was going to enter the portal, Jeff. And I don't think it was anything necessarily with how his experience was at Penn State, other than all the tackles were coming back. It was going to probably be another season for Vandenberg where he wasn't going to see the field. But now the announcement was made that he's going to be going to Georgia Tech. I thought that was really good for him to get at least that level. He wasn't going down to Division II football, but that there is still promise in this player that he could play at a pretty high level.
Yeah, I think for sure. From Penn State's perspective, again, it impacts your depth, and I think you know, he was a guy you liked having on the team. But I don't think it changes anything in terms of the projections. Like, I don't think this is a substantial loss from a productivity standpoint for that defensive line. And truthfully, I'm with you. I think Georgia Tech is a good landing spot. Obviously, still a D1 program, and I'm sure they have some aspirations to do some good things in the ACC this year. But I think him going to Georgia Tech kind of tells you what you need to know as a Penn State fan. Like, if he was going to Ohio State or if he was going to Alabama, you know, like, your eyebrow would raise. And again, he'd still have, you know, would see where he'd end up on the depth chart. But I think by going to Georgia Tech, even if he ends up being a starter and a productive starter at that, I think as a Penn State fan, it's like, okay, well, again, he wanted to get playing time. That makes sense. I never begrudge anybody. You have, you know, 4 years, well, in the non-COVID years, 4 years of eligibility. I get it. If you sit for a year or two, man, you want to get out there and use that eligibility. You want the opportunity to play the sport that you love. Makes a ton of sense. And yeah, I think you wish Jordan the very best. But, you know, I don't think there's any question this was a move that was solely about playing time. And he just was not going to get a lot here. And, you know, and hopefully he does at Georgia Tech. I mean, we'll see how that plays out, but certainly it seems like a very good opportunity for him anyway.
Yeah, I never have a problem, Jeff, with a player leaving in this way where you know pretty much he's not going to get reps, he's not going to get on the field, and decides to move on to go someplace where he would get the opportunity to play. So when that happens, I say, hey, you know, more power to the player. I'm happy for him. I hope he does get the opportunity to play, and I hope he does very well down there. All right, Jeff, we also had, sticking with football, we had James Franklin's press conference this week as the team began their spring practice mode. That's exciting for all of us who are football fans. Just in general, I have a lot of notes from the press conference, a lot of things I want to talk to you about. But I'll open it up to you first. Was there anything special, anything in particular that stood out to you when listening to James Franklin with his press conference?
So the two things that, and I don't know that, you know, there's anything terribly shocking or anything, but I did think it was interesting listening to him, discuss the, as he put it, painstaking detail that went into the coaches kind of figuring out the terminology and just kind of the overall basic scope of the offensive and defensive systems, and, you know, at least the notion of trying to put the egos aside and not what's in the best interest of the coordinators, not what's in the best interest of the head coach or the coaches that have been here, but really the kids and the program moving forward. I just, again, not terribly surprising, but I think I liked hearing the, again, what appears to be a lot of time and a lot of thought that went into that process to try to make sure they're all on the same page here moving forward. And I think the consistency that he talked about that Drew Aller, again, not anything surprising, but Aller, by all accounts, statistically had a terrific season last year. But when you watch the games, and in particular the Michigan and the Ohio State games, right, as a Penn State fan, you're like, and even Ole Miss, it's like need more if we're going to take that next step and be a team that can truly contend for a national title. The other thing that I liked hearing, and maybe I'm reading more into it than I should, but I don't think so. And it was a brief little comment on Bo Prabula, and I forget exactly how he put it, but it's like, yeah, you know, I think he needs to be a contributor. I'm overstating the way he put it, but my interpretation of it was, yes, Prabula is obviously needs to be ready to go in case of injury, but also is a guy that we need to have involved and should have had involved more last year. And again, I don't think it has to be in any great capacity, but short yardage situations, it certainly makes a ton of sense. And it feels like with Andy Kotelnicki in charge here, that is something where they're going to utilize that skill set in the spots that it makes sense. At least that's my interpretation and what I'm anticipating going into the season.
Just to hit on the couple things that you did, let's start with the discussion with the coordinators. And James Franklin, I believe, is a very smart guy, very meticulous on these kind of things, very process-oriented with bringing in the new coordinators and how to deal with it. And, of course, we're not going to know for sure until we see what happens in the season. But I think what gets confused a lot, and I see this reflected when our listeners send in questions. You know, we've got questions that essentially were, hey, wait a minute, why are we hearing about similarities with the offense? Shouldn't we be hearing about differences? You know, we don't want the same offense that we saw a year ago. We want it very different. But I think what James Franklin is doing is there are certain things that every team does. And I think some of this is he wants to make things easier for the players, merging terminology between what, you know, Andy Kotelnicki might call something versus what they do at Penn State. And the goal there is to make it easier for the team. And also, as you put it, you know, they're trying to do what's best for Penn State, not just say, Andy Kotelnicki, bring in here what you did in Kansas. Now, with that said, we certainly want to see some different things than we saw a year ago, right, Jeff?
Yeah, I I'm counting on that. And listen, I do think I'm excited to see the way this offense, I think what you're going to see with this offense this year is what I thought we would see last year, which is I think they're going to get Nicholas Singleton out in space a little more. I think they're going to utilize his skill set and maximize it. And I think you are truly going to have that run first mentality where it sets up, hold your breath here for a second, a long passing game. I think they may actually throw the ball more than 20 yards down the field off of play action setups from time to time. And again, I think the rest of the pieces of the puzzle are there for this offense to be very productive.
Okay, Jeff, that is it for quarter number three. We're going to continue the football conversation when we get back, quarter number four. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking Penn State football right now. Got some news going that the spring practice has begun. James Franklin met with the media earlier this week, and we're talking about that conversation. There was so much that went on there, and you were talking about some of the highlights for you is what was going to go on with the coordinators. You also mentioned Drew Aller, and this, Jeff, is where I think a lot of folks are unfair with James Franklin. In these press conferences, I actually believe he's pretty candid, and yes, you know, he talked about Drew Aller and the positives, you know, with his TD to interception ratio being impressive. And as you pointed out, the numbers were pretty good. But he didn't let Drew Aller completely off the hook. You know, he used the expression, we need to see more consistency. And essentially he was saying, you know what, we're not happy with the performance against Michigan and Ohio State. That's the way I interpreted it.
Yeah, and I think, and listen, I think that's fair, and I think it's something that, you know, when you have a big-time quarterback, which I think Drew Aller truly is, you need him to step up in the biggest moments and hopefully grow from the experience of a year ago. Now, again, I think there's a lot of things that come into play. And I think, you know, having confidence in your offensive line, having confidence in your wide receivers, having confidence in your offensive coordinator. I don't know how much of that was or wasn't there throughout the season last year. But, you know, I think you need all of those things to be able to go out. And again, on the biggest stages and the biggest moments, be able to produce at the highest level. And so, you know, it feels like everything should be in place or is in place this year. For Drew Aller to go out and have a successful season. And I really think it starts, to me, with the two running backs and the production that I think they will have, which I am expecting to be much greater than it was a year ago as well. And I think if that happens, again, I think Aller will take that next step. But, I mean, he has to. If this team is truly going to contend for a Big Ten or a national title in the upcoming season. Again, there's a bunch of things that need to come together and have to work out well. But the thing that this program needs is Drew Aller to step up and play big in those big moments and you know, in the games that are the most meaningful throughout the season. And, I think Drew Aller would be the first to tell you that he needs to do that was not achieved last year. And again, I'm not pinning it all on Aller. I'm not sitting here telling you that Drew Aller is the reason Penn State lost those games, but I think he needs to be the reason that you're competitive or winning those games in the upcoming season.
You know, Jeff, and I guess this is our job to, you know, pick on different little things, little phrases that James Franklin uses during a press conference. And one of the things that stood out to me was in talking about the wide receivers, one of the first things he said was the issues was not a lack of talent at wide receiver. How do you respond to that?
I mean, I think that that's true because I think we saw it in the first game. I mean, I don't think it's that these guys aren't capable. Two things. I think they have a lot of athleticism, and I think they're capable of making catches. I think much like Drew Aller, it's, hey, can you consistently run the routes, read the defenses, get to where you need to be, battling through whatever the defense is giving you, and then make the catches, right? And they didn't do that last year, but I don't think it was a lack of talent. I really don't. I think it was, again, probably a combination, again, of the coaching and whether or not they were being put in the best positions. Certainly the lack of separation was an issue. But again, is that solely on the receivers, or was it partly the scheme, partly the receivers, partly, again, sometimes, you know, I know it's difficult for anybody to do, but every now and then it's like, oh, you know what? We played somebody really good and they did a really good job. That does happen from time to time. I think whatever it was, it needs to be better. It needs to be more consistent. The hope is, again, with a new offensive scheme, a new offensive system, with another year of maturity, understanding of what it takes at this level, that, you know, all of this can come together. But whether or not it does remains to be seen. But I do think there's lots of reason for optimism. And, you know, I think James Franklin is honest enough that if he felt like, hey, you know what, we just haven't recruited well enough and we don't have the guys there, I think he would tell you, we've got to do a better job in the recruiting front. But I think he genuinely believes that they have enough big-time receivers in that room to go out and make some good things happen in the passing game.
And I think the addition of Julian Fleming has a high enough floor. I feel confident we're going to get at least a certain level of performance from him. I think the variable will be Trey Wallace and his health. If he is healthy, I think the ceiling is there for him. And all of a sudden, if both those guys perform, Keandre Lambert-Smith isn't alone out there as your number one performer. He may even be wide receiver three if the other guys can do the job. Okay, Jeff, more discussion about, we knew this move was being made, Abdul Carter moving to defensive end. What we didn't know was that this was initiated on Carter's side. It's understandable, the value of a defensive end so much greater at linebacker. Do you have any concerns about him making that move?
I really don't, Jim, and two primary reasons. One is that it was initiated from him, and that was news, and I think that is significant. And it was kind of funny listening to James Franklin recount how they kind of thought that's where he should be from the get-go. But it's like, hey, we just want you in the program, and if you want to be a linebacker, that's where we'll put you. You're good enough that, you know, we'll take you wherever you want to be. But I think the fact that he's recognizing, the value there, and I think also with his size that he thinks that's a better fit. But I also I think his game is well suited there. And I think, you know, it is an adjustment. And James talked about that too, that, you know, this isn't a, hey, snap your fingers and now you're a great defensive end. Like, it is a different animal when you're in close to the line of scrimmage. But I think that I think it's an asset for Abdul Carter coming from the linebacker spot to that defensive end spot in terms of his understanding and knowledge of the offense and of the way the defensive schemes work. I think he will end up being a big-time force there. Now, whether he comes out and completely disrupts the West Virginia game remains to be seen. I mean, it may be a little bit, you know, he needs to get a few games under his belt and figure some things out. But I do think by the time Penn State hits the Big Ten portion of the schedule, that this is going to be universally applauded as a move that was in a very good way, a difference maker for this Penn State defense.
And I think, Jeff, to me, the variable there at defensive end will be, how is he against the running game? You know, will he be undersized from that aspect? I have no doubt in my mind when the other team is looking to throw the ball, he's going to be a terror. And I think those offensive tackles, I think it's going to look a lot like when we saw Chop Robinson, when some of those tackles, they just could not keep up with them. The speed, the bend, that's what I picture from Abdul Carter. A couple other notes came up that we weren't aware of, or at least I wasn't. Drew Shelton, I think, on the offensive line, he's going to miss the spring, that he had surgery after the season. And James Franklin did explain it was the kind of surgery that not necessarily every player would choose to do it, but I think the fact that he chose to do it right after the season ended last year, so I think it's most important for him to be ready come August. But what that did, Jeff, was led to a discussion of the rest of the offensive line. And it wasn't really a situation of, oh, woe is us if Drew Shelton. It was more of, look how many more options we have, Jeff. That is unusual for a Penn State offensive line. And I think I really like that.
Yeah, I do too. The size of Nolan Rucci was also a little eye-popping coming out of that. And I think that is very good news for Penn State fans. And again, if nothing else, you would think in some short yardage situations, you might want to go ahead and get Mr. Rucci out there and let him clear an avenue here for either Catron Allen or Nicholas Singleton or Bo Pribula, whatever it may be. So, I think, you know, we talk about it all the time, Jim. I mean, the difference between the elite and the good, to always go back to James Franklin's infamous press conference, I do think that depth, right, is a big part of the equation. And I do think that depth on the offensive line and really on the defensive line as well now continues to get better. Now, they lost, obviously, a ton of talent on the defensive side at the end position last year. But with Abdul Carter's move and with the guys they have coming back, I mean, I think you feel good about that. But I think this is probably as good as I've felt, at least, about this offensive line going into a season since, I don't even know when, probably at least 15 years. And I think the Drew Shelton situation, they know what they have in Drew Shelton. And yes, he's got to get back and healthy. And, you know, I'm sure this is a bit of a setback to him, but I think he'll be fine. I think at the end of the day, this does end up being one of those things that is beneficial for the program, where you get a good hard look and kind of figure out with the other tackles who are your best options, who are the guys. And then when Shelton comes back, I think he'll work himself right in there as well. But I think the depth now on that offensive line and the looks that they'll get, the reps that they'll get at the tackle spot, ends up just being very beneficial for the upcoming season.
I think so too. And I always think it's interesting when James Franklin throws names out there without being asked about it. Obviously, you mentioned Rucci that he talked about, up 15 pounds, but he mentioned true freshmen Egan Boyer and Cooper Cousins. That, I think, bodes well if you've got true freshmen being mentioned unprompted. Jeff, that's going to have to be it. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.